I got a bad feeling about this.
No reward is worth this.
Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
What a piece of junk!
Will somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way?
And we welcome you to one of our bonus editions of Meet Me at Mutual, a Star Wars story, if you will. We're talking Han Solo and his standalone movie that was out. It's been out about a month now, and we're looking forward to it. And so we've got a panel of, I don't know if they're experts, but they like to talk Star Wars, so we'll go with that. Most of which are new. We've got a new face with us, but we're just going to go around the table. We'll start with Tina, and just let them introduce themselves before we dive into the subject matter. So, Tina, take it away.
This is Tina. I have been on the Star Wars thing several times now, so I'm sure you all are familiar with my level of Star Wars expertise and attention span during the podcast, but my Twitter handle is Erdrick Storm. I don't blog or anything, so I don't have anything to promote, but you can follow me if you want to hear me complain about the Cardinals and their wonderful offense.
Steven.
Hey, this is Steven McNeil. You can find me two places, at smcneil_87 and at STLHatTrick, where I promote a website that I talk Cardinals, Blues, Star Wars, Marvel, DC, kind of your whole nerd fandom thing.
Ron?
Yeah, Ron Nuttall. I do a couple podcasts that are baseball related. I do the brand new Cardinals Nation 24/7 podcast. I do that with Chris Lawless. You can find us on Facebook at Cardinals Nation 24/7. We also have a big group that's just at Cardinals Nation. I do another one that's with a couple of Dirty Cub fans called Team Arrivals Podcast. Tina, you guessed it on that once before. Team Arrivals Podcast on Facebook, and it's at Team Arrivals Pod on Twitter. The other show, I forgot that. I'm just not a Twitter guy, guys. I try my best. But the Twitter handle for the Cardinals is at CardinalsNation247. So thanks for having me on again, Daniel. Appreciate it.
One of these days, maybe we'll get Ron to the dark side and get him on
and see,
Twitter.
I did have something to promote.
Most of us do. Tina's the weird one on them. But, and then our
always.
New, well, yeah, in so many different ways. But
so many ways.
Our new face this time. Bradley, tell us about yourself.
Hi, my name is Brad McGinnis. I am on Twitter with the handle at StatsSTLCards. There I only tweet about Cardinals things, but I've been a huge Star Wars fan my whole life, and I'm happy to be here. I also have nothing to promote.
Well,
see, I'm not the weird one.
Well,
not anymore.
Not because of that.
I'm here with you.
Yeah. All right, so like I say, Solo, A Star Wars Story, came out May 25th. We know all the history that went along with this, with the change of directors late in the game, and you know how that was all going to be put together. Ron, we'll start with you. Going into the movie, what were your expectations? And when you came out, were they matched? Were they not matched? Were they? How did you feel about it afterwards?
You know, I didn't have high expectations going into it. It's not that I went into it thinking it was going to be a bad movie. I just, the whole Solo explaining any part of his backstory is just not something that I needed to watch or it's not anything that I would have asked for. You know, it's, I'm a bit older. I'm 42, so I grew up on the originals. I grew up, you know, on the Harrison Ford interpretation of the character. So it's not that I think it's so sacred that nobody else can attempt to play that part, but it's just not a story I initially was interested in hearing about. I kind of like some of these characters where you don't know. You know, you met them at a certain point in time, and you got to know them, and you get to fill in the rest with your imagination. Take Boba Fett, for example. I didn't need to know about where he came from, what his origin was. He was a mystery to me, and that's what made the character interesting. So I had low expectations for the whole movie. With that said, I was actually very entertained coming out of the theater. So my expectations were low, so it wasn't very hard to meet them. But I guess I was pleasantly surprised. I mean, very early on in the movie, I got over the fact that it wasn't Harrison Ford playing Han Solo. I believed that the character was Han Solo very quickly. And it was fun. I mean, Solo's not my favorite Star Wars movie, but I would say it's teetering into the top half. It was entertaining. It was a good Star Wars story, which I think that's what their intention was, is to tell us something new, fresh, interesting. I like their take on it, and I came out of it with, yeah, this is a solid film.
Brad, what about you? I mean, how did you go into this, and how did you come out of it?
So I went into the movie with really low expectations. They didn't do a very good job of promoting it, in my opinion. And then the trailer, I don't know, the guy who played Han, Alden Ehrenreich, he just, in my opinion, looked horrible in the trailer. So I went in with really low expectations, but it was still Star Wars, so I was still going to see it. And I think because of those low expectations, I came out loving it more than if I had higher expectations, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. Because it surprised me in a lot of ways. The acting was way better than I expected. I mean, nobody's going to be Harrison Ford. That's just, if you're going in and you need it to be as good as Harrison Ford was, then you're not going to enjoy the film. Because nobody can match that, what he had. It's a one in a million type of thing. But I thought it was fun. I'm with Ron, where I think that it was kind of, it's more in the middle for me in terms of Star Wars movies. But it was a really fun film, and the action was good. It was just a good kind of popcorn movie, and it felt like a smaller movie in the Star Wars universe. It wasn't like, here is everything that has happened. Like, Han Solo has been in contact with so many different characters that they could have put a million things into this movie. And I was really happy to see that they kept it pretty small scale in terms of the characters we'd seen or in the references that they made. And the story was just entertaining and fun. So I had a really good time watching it.
Tina, what about you?
I had a pretty similar to both Ron and Bradley, and that I didn't have a lot of expectations going into it. I wasn't really expecting it to be a horrible movie or anything, but I didn't, you know, anticipate that it would be one of my more favorite in the series. And I was pleasantly surprised. I thought it was really entertaining. When I watched it the first time, I kind of had this feeling like it didn't really feel like a Star Wars movie, but I actually watched it again today. And didn't, for whatever reason, I don't know if it's just because I knew what was going to happen, it didn't seem like it felt as out of place as it did the first time that I watched it. But I was actually kind of glad that they didn't try to explain everything about his backstory in the movie, that it was more kind of focused more on a specific set of events in his life rather than trying to flesh out, you know, everything that we didn't know. It was entertaining. It was, you know, I enjoyed watching it both times that I watched it. I don't think it's going to be one that I'm going to watch over and over like, you know, the original trilogy or any of that. But I definitely enjoyed it. And I thought it was a decent installment. And I wouldn't say that I necessarily totally buy in on that actor and that character as the younger version of Han Solo. But it worked well enough that it didn't really bother me.
And Steven, what did you think?
I thought it was pretty good. I enjoyed it a lot. You know, it kind of went above my expectations quite a bit. You know, we had all heard prior to the movie coming out that a lot of Disney executives kind of had thought that it was going to bomb. But I really enjoyed it. It really had a different kind of feel to it. So for what it was, I just kind of really enjoyed it. You know, I didn't think they tried to do too much. So I thought that was good. But other than that, I mean, I just thought it was really good.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the ballpark of most of y'all, although I will say as the trailers continue to come out closer to time, they actually did increase my level of excitement about this, because there were moments in there where you could see a stance or a smirk or something like that that made you feel like it was Han Solo. And, you know, if you're getting the chance to see the Falcon and all that kind of stuff again, you know, it was exciting. And I felt like this movie, unlike Last Jedi, and unlike, you know, maybe like Infinity War or some of these others, you know, from the franchise that have had so much weight on them for story purposes, you know, I mean, things that, you know, just there's so much going into it that you're kind of concerned or you feel this weight of expectations going into it, and there wasn't that. You knew Han Solo and you knew Chewie were going to survive and Lando was going to survive and the Falcon was going to be there, and, you know, the new characters may or may not, but, you know, you don't have that kind of, you know, worry about them. It was, like y'all said, a light, fun popcorn movie, and that's kind of, you know, that's kind of what Star Wars needs to be to some degree. I think we could, you know, argue whether you should get into, you know, deep philosophical debates on Star Wars, which you can, obviously, but, you know, it boils down to it's a whole lot of things shooting things in space, so, you know, how serious can it really should be? So it was good. I'm looking, you know, I've watched it twice, look forward to come out on DVD and try it out again. Let's just talk maybe about some of the things that worked for you in this movie. Brad, we'll start with you. What was maybe your highlights, something that you really liked out of this?
I think just right off the bat, the first thing that comes to mind is the performance of both Woody Harrelson and Donald Glover. I love the both of them, and I think that they were fantastic in these roles. I mean, both their characters. You know, obviously, Woody Harrelson played a character we've never seen before, and he brought something new to the Star Wars table, if you will, that was just fun and exciting and entertaining. And then Donald Glover had the task of recreating something that we have loved for years, and he did an incredible job with that. He met every expectation I had for Lando as a character. So those would be my two biggest highlights of the movie.
Tina, what about you?
I would agree with the ones that he just mentioned, but just to add something different, probably the surprise cameo at the end, because a lot of the movie was pretty predictable, so it was kind of nice to have that little bit that I wasn't anticipating that would happen right at the end there. And then, you know, aside from that, I thought pretty much all of the performances were pretty good. What's her name? Amelia Clark. She was kind of her average, usual, below average, but
Khaleesi.
She was better than
Khaleesi. Thank you.
Yeah, she was better than I thought she would be, particularly in the parts where she got to kind of utilize the same sort of character aspects as her Game of Thrones work. But the performances were good. I keep wanting to call him Danny Glover. His name's Donald Glover, isn't it? He was particularly good as Lando. And
old with the stuff.
Yes. Maybe he can get a cameo in the next one. But I thought the performances were all good, and there was a lot of, you know, fun chase scenes and different things. And Woody Harrelson was surprisingly good to me. Not that I dislike him or anything. It's just I never really thought that's a guy that needs to be in a Star Wars movie. But he was good. So that was probably the performances of the different characters was my favorite part, and then that little twist ending at the end of it.
Ron, did anything really exciting stand out for you?
Yeah, there were a couple things I can point to. I mean, one thing that Tina just mentioned was the ending was surprising, and I want to reveal just what was going on in my head at the ending. Well, you know what? No, I'll save that till later, because I'm sure that's...
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's something you're going to want to cover later, sure. So I'm not going to get into that now. But a couple of things early on that worked really well for me. One of them was I expected to see a more vulnerable Han Solo One that cared about someone else or certain people more than he did himself. And we saw that early on, where he was in love with this girl, was his friend, and they got separated at some point. sorry, I'm battling a cold. I had to put myself on mute. I was coughing. We saw a different side of the character that we hadn't seen before, and that's somebody that was worried about somebody else, genuinely concerned. And his mission was to get back to her. I kind of expected to see something like that, a different side of him, and we got that. The other thing that I wasn't sure how they were going to do it, because most of us that have followed Star Wars for as long as we have knew the whole Chewie Han thing was going to happen. And I bet all of us had some kind of story or vision in our head about how that was going to take place. I loved how they did that. That is one part I was pleasantly surprised with. Chewie was going to eat him, but he didn't. And then there was the shower. And then there was the shower scene, which was hilarious. And so those were two things early on that I absolutely loved. I loved how they did it.
Steven, what about you?
You know, I kind of agree with everybody. It just, I really, really liked the ending, obviously. I thought that was well done. I thought that it kind of gave us an explanation side to Han's character, almost in the way that, you know, what happened kind of hardened him. And I liked that. I liked just the getting explanation for the character and how he acts. So that, I thought that was good. And I thought, you know, Alden, he did a really good job. I came out somewhat, not necessarily disappointed in Lando, but disappointed in his role. I guess I kind of was disappointed in the hype per se. I thought he was going to have a bigger role. Same with L3, and not having the role that he had, I just kind of was a little disappointed. I thought Donald Glover did a fantastic job. He knocked it out of the park, but I would have liked to have seen more.
Yeah, I think for me, and I'd need to go in light of watching this movie, go back and watch, you know, Empire and Jedi a little bit, but at times it felt like Donald Glover might be playing a really good parody of what we expect Billy Dee Williams and Lando as, this, you know, charming, suave guy that, you know, almost a little bit over the top, but it was still enjoyable, and then some of the best lines in the movie come from that. I think that overall it was great to see, you know, Han and Chewie and the Falcon co-piloting, you know, all that again. It was great to follow those characters, and then the setups for potential sequels that may or may not ever happen now, but, you know, with Darth Maul, with everything that goes along with that, was kind of interesting. And the, you know, I thought the end where it was like a triple cross to some degree, was interesting as well. So, you know, Brad, anything that didn't work for you?
There were a couple of things that didn't work. At the very beginning, I felt like there was no real setup for Han and Kira's relationship. Like, there wasn't this scene where they're like dreaming about being away from this horrible planet. That almost felt rushed to me. I was just expected to care about this relationship that they gave me no reason to care about. And then within, I don't know, 5 minutes of the movie, they're separated, and then give another 5 minutes and they're back, like, he found her again and she's completely different. So I had a tough time caring about the emotional relationship between the two of them, and I did feel that Alden Ehrenreich's worst scenes was whenever he had to do a love scene. I thought he played a decent Han or a pretty good Han, but his scenes whenever he had to be in a loving capacity with Kira was a little rough sometimes for me. And then the other issue I had, and I'd love to hear your guys' opinions on it, but I thought L3 was just annoying. I found her, and she was in it for less time, but I found her like the most annoying character since Jar Jar Binks, probably. And part of that was I just didn't understand how I was supposed to feel. I didn't understand if they were trying to make a statement by having a social justice droid in it, which, like, I'm not saying, oh, social justice is bad or equal rights is bad by any means, but her character was really goofy, and I found myself at times wondering, should I be laughing at this character, or should I be taking her seriously as a statement? And if you're making a statement, I feel like it shouldn't have been I feel like I should be laughing at her type of thing. And I just felt absolutely nothing when she died. So that's my opinion on that.
Well, Steven, what'd you think about L3 or anything that might have fallen flat?
I kind of agree about L3. It was just kind of an awkward character. And I thought it was... it just was different. I mean, they I read the Solo book prior to seeing the movie, and we kind of got a little bit of a background on her character. We realized that she was a little bit different than the average droid. But it was just awkward. That was really the thing that I kind of came away from it. It just, like, you didn't know, like, how to really react in a way.
Ron, what about you? Where were you on the L3?
I understand what the other two have said about the character. I mean, it didn't really bother me one way or the other. I mean, I saw the emotion, I think, in Lando's eyes and that's one of those instances where you kind of just fill in the blanks of the past. You know, he's obviously had a deep history with this droid. You know, like many of us are attached to an object or something, or like people are attached to a car and they give the car a personality when it's an inanimate thing. I kind of saw that in him. But I thought what was really interesting, what redeemed that character for me, was that character is now a part of the Falcon. If we fast forward a little bit to the end of the movie, that character, that brain is uploaded into the Falcon. So to me, I thought that was kind of an interesting way that they attached that particular thing to something that we've always known, but we've never known it was that thing until now. So I that part for me worked. A part that didn't work for me too well was that how in the hell did Han know Wookiee language? And how was he able to growl it out as his head was being dunked into mud? That part to me was a little odd. It was a little too convenient. I have a suspicion that was a Lord Miller thing. But I could be wrong. But that's the only part for me. That's really the only part for me that stuck out that just was unnecessary, didn't work too well. It would have been fine if Chewie understands basic, which is the... Anybody that's ever read Legend books or anything, that's the language, right, that Star Wars uses is basic. It's fine that Chewie understands basic, but Han didn't need to know how to speak Wookiee. That seemed a little too stretchy to me, but there's anything I can critique and really poke at, that's one of the few things.
I do wonder, as you mentioned that, I didn't think about it at the time, but, you know, in the expanded universe, which is not canon anymore, there was at least some idea that Han had a Wookiee benefactor, a Wookiee, you know, that he was close with on the streets of Corellia. I wonder if that's a little bit of a toss back, you know, without explicitly saying that he had run into Wookiees with whatever they were doing on Corellia. I don't know. You're right. It is it's one of those things that does kind of
it would have helped.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I mean, of course, you know, you don't want to necessarily explain everything, but that kind of, that does, you're right, it does kind of come out of a little bit out of the left field there, it's a good thing he did. And, I mean, it does make some sense because, you know, as we've seen throughout Star Wars always, Han really knows what Chewie's saying, but not everybody else does.
Well, and who else did Rey know as well?
Rey seemed to get some indication of it. They must know some. I don't know. Of course, she can do a lot of things. So
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get into other movies.
No, that's fair.
I think that
that's fair.
Just very, very weird. All right.
Yeah. Tina.
On the L3 thing, I didn't really have any strong feelings about that character when I watched the movie. I thought some of her lines were kind of funny, and I thought some of the interaction or the implication of whatever the relationship between her and Lando was supposed to be was kind of weird. But I thought the character was okay. I thought it was funny sometimes, and you know, I wouldn't say I felt extremely sad when she died, but I did feel something when she died, and Lando was obviously sad about it. As far as stuff that I thought that didn't work in that, probably the most, I agree that the beginning of the movie felt kind of weird and rushed, but probably the most disappointing part of me was almost the whole thing where Chewie and Han meet. That, I kind of, in my mind, I had thought that there would have been something more dramatic and significant to their first meeting rather than just, you know, meeting in a jail cell or whatever. And parts of it, particularly the part where he starts trying to speak Wookiee, came off funny in a bad way. And that whole sequence I didn't like. So that was probably the low point of the movie for me. But other than that, there wasn't a whole lot of things that I really disliked about the movie.
Yeah, as you know, for L3, yeah, I'm kind of like with Tina. It didn't bother me too much. There were moments. I got the feeling that, you know, she put a whole lot of more stock into the relationship with Lando than Lando did. That she, you know, was kind of deluding herself to some degree about what Lando thought. But, you know, obviously there was some sort of connection there. And it's one of those things, again, you don't know what you have until it's gone. Lando probably never would have admitted that he cared for the droid in some form or fashion until, you know, she was shot out from underneath him.
I don't know, man. He was whimpering pretty good.
Yeah, and I said, but at that, you know, until that time, I don't know that he would have, you know, acknowledged that he put up with L3 for the most part. You know, talking about he would have had her memory wiped and things like that. But you know, it's kind of the bluster that hides sometimes the feelings underneath. But you know,
Daniel, can I ask you guys something about just the whole Chewie Han thing? Because I think this may, I'm guessing, Tina, I could be wrong, but this might be one of your disconnects with the whole way Chewie and Han were introduced together. Is something's not clear to me. Maybe you guys caught it and I didn't. Is it because we don't understand why Chewie's so loyal to Han? Because that's one thing that wasn't answered for me. I understand that they broke out of prison together, but I don't get why Chewie has the loyalty to him. So maybe you guys...
Well, I know at some point, and I don't remember where it's from. I don't know if it was from one of the expanded universe novels that aren't canon anymore or from somewhere else. Somewhere I remember this idea that Chewie had a life debt to Han because he had saved his life or something. And that didn't really seem to jive. Of course, I guess that could have happened after, you know, their initial meeting. So I guess I was expecting us to get an explanation on that part of it. And I don't know if that's not considered to be part of the story anymore or if it's something that happened later on in their history. But I would say that's probably part of it for me.
Yeah, and I think we've always known that, well, at least, and Daniel's already said it, that there has been this thing with legends that we've always assumed Chewie has this kind of life debt to Han. That's why he's always been so loyal. But obviously that didn't come through in this movie.
The impression that I got from the movie was almost like Chewie stuck with him because he didn't really have anything better to do, almost. I mean, like, his people, I mean, you would think he might have gone off looking for his people, but it seemed like almost like he, you know, he can't go back to his planet, so I'll just stick with this guy.
I think the life debt was shown whenever Han pulled him up from the train before he was about to hit the mountain, and that's like kind of a really, I don't know, it's a stretch, I think, but that might be where Chewie's like, oh, you saved my life, now I owe my entire life to you.
Steven, I think you've got something. I'll let you go ahead, but I've got a thought on where that came from too. Steven?
I'm on mute, sorry.
No,
I do know that it is kind of implied in the Aftermath series when Han is going to Kashyyyk to rescue. We kind of get that there's like some kind of like Han's trying to repay Chewie, that Chewie paid him. I get where everybody's talking about, but I didn't see that in the movie either.
My feeling on it, and I don't, you know, this is just me, I don't know anything else of that, besides the fact that Han saved him from the Imperials, you know, they worked together and he freed him in that regard. I don't think that was it, but I think that helped. I think it was when, to me, I think what made more of an impact on Chewie was when Han, in the minds of Kessel, basically let him free to help his people, for him to go out and save his family, his tribe, or whatever, it doesn't matter. And that's when, you know, Chewie realized there was something there, and he owed him for that as well. And again, I'm not sure that we've seen the life debt, if you will, if that even exists anymore. But I think some of the loyalty that Chewie has to Han comes from the respect that Han showed to Chewie in that moment of letting him go and save those people, because and not expecting, he never expected Chewie to come back. It was like, hey, you go do here, take this weapon, I'll get this done, but you go do what you need to do. And I think that made an impact on Chewie. Well, you know, we'll see if they ever develop that anymore, but that's kind of where I came from it.
That's really good that you point that out, Daniel. I forgot about that. And you'd have to think that, you know, kind of a moment like that between these two characters, and you're right, and there may be more to it, but you got to remember, I mean, we saw Chewie in all the way back to Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's seen some pretty big betrayals, right?
Yep.
So seeing one person show any type of loyalty or understanding or compassion towards him probably goes a long way.
Probably so. All right, well then, let's get to that big cameo, that big reveal at the end of the movie. And I've got to say, I went into this, I'm not even sure I knew that there was going to be any original or, you know, character that we had seen before come out of this. But I definitely didn't know that it was going to be Darth Maul. Steven, I know you are well caught up with the Darth Maul saga from, you know, a lot of people probably weren't. How confused do you think people were that mainly just watched the movie, that all of a sudden saw this guy that they last saw, you know, fluttering in two pieces down a shaft in Naboo, all of a sudden is put together and leading a crime syndicate?
Kind of makes me laugh, because just putting myself in that place, you know, having just started watching Clone Wars and Rebels about 2 years ago, two or 3 years ago, it just kind of makes me laugh putting myself in that position as to what, putting myself in their shoes and saying, hey, well, that's got to be pretty freaky, and pretty surprising for them. You know, I don't want to say that I expected Maul, but I expected something. I had already had a tip off that there was going to be some kind of ode to the animated series. So it was kind of interesting to see that it was Maul, but at the same time, it made sense with what was going on, and I loved it. I thought it was great. I know there are some people who didn't like it, but I thought it was fantastic, and I thought it left fans on the edge of their seat.
Ron, you were talking about it earlier and your mindset. What was going through your mind?
Well, you know what? When that whole scene took place, so Dryden Vos had been defeated, and you had Kira, the character, pulling up the hologram. And you could only see it from the side as they were panning around. I genuinely thought we were going to get our first look at Snoke early. Just for a minute, I thought, is this how they're going to tie this stuff together? Like, are we going to get this, like, hidden character behind the scenes or something? I mean, I was a little surprised. I mean, quite honestly, to see there was actually Darth Maul. Now, it makes sense, right? If you've watched The Clone Wars, which I have, if you watch Rebels, which I have, yeah, it all fits. It makes total sense, but... Is that an AC?
I don't know what that is. But it's gone. There we go.
Evidently, that doesn't like my theory.
Talk louder, I guess.
I honestly thought, just for a split second, we were going to get our first image of Snoke.
I'm still here.
Who is testing jet engines?
It might be mine, because I think I'm the only one that's not hearing whatever it is that you're hearing.
Maybe so, because I think everybody else may be muted themselves. I'm not sure.
Well, I don't know how to mute myself, so I guess you just got to deal with my air conditioning.
Well, it seems to be gone now, so...
Well, as I was saying, Daniel, Snoke, that's it.
Snoke, that's it. Yeah, well, I don't know if I can even edit that out, so we may just have to deal with it. Yeah, that's an interesting thought, Ron. I mean, I got to admit, you know, my first thought, because you see the hologram and you see the cloak, you kind of start thinking Emperor. I mean, right? Because that's what we're used to.
Right.
And so to see Maul come out of that was very interesting. And yeah, I mean, then it does make sense. He's been part of a crime syndicate. And you start having to figure out where he is in that timeline, because, you know, in Rebels we see him die, actually die this time. You know, Clone Wars is before this. You kind of have to start piecing together, but it was very interesting, a very interesting reveal. Brad, what did you think about it?
I liked it a lot. I thought it was a bold move, and I personally like that. I like that the Disney's Star Wars is just kind of ignoring everything that George Lucas tried to do. I love that they bring back a character that George Lucas killed off after, even though everybody loved him. And I'm interested.
To be fair, George Lucas was in charge of Clone Wars, which is where Maul returned.
That's true. He did, and I do like that it was consistent with the Clone Wars too, which was really cool. And although it might be confusing to a lot of people who haven't watched the show, and it may not connect, but I mean, I'm sure anybody that cares about it and is that confused will just do a quick Google search and see what his past has been. But I'm really interested to see how they connect the films now, because I was reading into it a little bit and I saw that Kira, the girl who played Kira, I can't remember, Emilia Clarke is her name. She's contracted for 3 more movies, and I was looking up, Felicity Jones too is contracted for 3 more movies. And so I'm interested to see if they connect the movies at any point, like how Marvel does their films. So it definitely left me on the edge of my seat, definitely kept me interested in the movie, or at least in the future of Star Wars, which is very important nowadays.
Yeah, and a topic we may get into in a little bit. I think, a number of those actors, Alden Ehrenreich, I think Donald Glover maybe as well, signed 3 movie deals. It is really strange that Felicity Jones signed a 3 movie deal, but I guess that was just, there were some options out there where some people survived. I also wonder if they pay that off in like animation and stuff like that, because they've used voices. But
Felicity Jones, there's a whole, 14 years of her character that we don't know about, so they could easily go back in time with her character if need be.
Yeah, or have her pop up in, as you talk about tying it together, they talked about maybe that Crimson Dawn thread running through the Boba Fett movie or some other movie or stuff like that, and you could easily see Felicity Jones show up as a cameo in something like that while she was in her, questionable past days too, so that may be interesting. Tina, what did you think of Maul?
Well, I thought it was, an interesting twist, something that I wasn't expecting. I hadn't even actually thought about the aspect of people who didn't watch the animated series being completely confused about why this guy that should be in 2 pieces is suddenly back on their screen. But it definitely made me interested in exactly, what Maul was up to. And with Kira and with the Crimson Dawn and whatever else it was that he was doing, and how that tied into the what looked to be at least hinted at the early part of the rebellion or whatever. So it's probably going to be disappointed now that they probably won't actually pursue any sequels, or at least it doesn't look very likely, because I was actually interested to learn more about where they were going with that. Because it was not something I had anticipated cropping up. I assumed that we had seen the last of Maul with what they did with him in the Rebels and Clone Wars, and he was about the last person that I thought was going to crop up at the end of this movie.
Yeah, well, Tina, I agree with you, and that's why initially I thought we're getting our first glimpse of a younger Snoke, like 35 years earlier, and Daniel, I've got a little bit of a continuity issue with how they showed Maul in Solo versus how we saw him in Rebels. Because the Maul, I know the stills are limited. This thing's not out on home release yet, but he looked like, I don't know how to describe it. He looked more crinkly.
Yeah,
that's the worst description I've ever given. But he looks.
Clark Kent is as young as he used to be.
But makeup, come on.
Well, he definitely looked more weathered, I would say.
Weathered.
But that could just be a consequence of the animation, particularly that animation style, versus seeing the character in a live action movie.
Yeah, and you might be absolutely right, but that's the whole continuity thing we have, or at least I have, with the story group, the animation, and these things are all ticked and tied a little bit better. Like, we just saw Maul in Rebels. We saw his end, and he didn't look that much different, physically, than he did at the end of the Clone Wars when we saw him last. So, just those little details. I understand that only a small percentage of Star Wars fans absorb and know the animation versus the casual fan who will go to the theater. And so, Daniel, I think you're right. When people look at and hey, what? Wait a minute, wasn't this guy cut in half in 1999? Why the hell am I seeing him right now? They won't know that, but just one little detail there that I thought was kind of a little bit off.
I do think it's very interesting that they are tying those. If you ever asked me, would we see Darth Maul, I'd say no. I'd say, yeah, it's possible just because of what I know about watching the animation, but the casual person that goes to a movie isn't going to know that. They're not going to base their stuff or base important things like that off of the TV shows that have a significantly smaller audience, and yet here they are. And then whether that's a way for them to, you know, flip it around and let people say, hey, you know, they do the Google search, they read about this, and they say, hey, let's go watch Clone Wars, let's see what he does. And, you know, maybe that, you know, maybe that's some idea of what they're doing there. But it was, I never would have expected them to go that route. So let's, you know, we've talked about Maul, and we've talked about how they set up the sequels, but again, the total box office as of right now, I'm looking at Box Office Mojo, and it's just shy of $200 million, which is a lot of money, but obviously not a lot of money for a Star Wars movie. This, for the same time period for Rogue One was closing in on $500 million. Steven, what do you think is the biggest reason that Solo didn't take off at the box office?
I would break it down to two things. The number one thing that I think that caught them in a bad spot with marketing. They waited until darn near March to get a full trailer out. Mm-hmm. And then again, like if you remember with Last Jedi, like they had trailers and TV spots and trailers and TV spots and TV spots and trailers all leading up into the movie. And yeah, you had a little bit with Solo, but it wasn't near as intense and large in terms of marketing campaigns as Last Jedi and Rogue One and all these other movies were. And then I also think it didn't have the draw of a typical saga or other type of story. And I've been a big, I've been saying this a lot prior to the movie coming out, is that it didn't feel like Han Solo was a character who needed explaining. And I don't think you're going to have a lot of casual fans sitting there saying, oh, a movie about Han Solo? That's intriguing. Let's go see it. You know, they're not drawn to anything and everything Star Wars like us. They're not the crazies like us. So I think it's just marketing for one, and then I also think that the draw was not as large.
Tina, what was your feel for this?
I kind of had a feeling going into it that it may have just been too close on the end of The Last Jedi, for one thing. I don't think there was enough time for people to really get, you know, to where they were excited to see another Star Wars movie. I think anything that's not a part of the, you know, the numbered movies is not going to have as much interest to begin with. And then the announcement for this one was not that far off, you know, from The Last Jedi. And then I think the fact that people were, at least some people were disappointed with The Last Jedi probably also played into it, although I think most of the people that were disappointed were kind of the hardcore people that I think probably would have gone to see this movie anyway, so I don't know how much that played into it. But to me, I think probably the biggest part of it was just fatigue from the number of Star Wars movies, and also that I don't think that a Han Solo movie is something that the general audience that's not, you know, go watch every Star Wars movie was necessarily that interested in.
Brad, what do you think?
I can agree with both of you. The marketing for this movie seemed poor, and I wonder if they, I don't know what their thinking was behind it, or if they were just running behind on production. But they didn't even have a poster other than just the you know, obviously the Star Wars font with Solo and the black background. They didn't have a poster until 2 weeks before the movie came out. And so that's, I don't know, it's just, it's interesting how they marketed the movie. And I wonder if they, because originally the release date for this was supposed to be December of this year. And then now it's March, which is, you know, 5-6 months after The Last Jedi comes out. And I wonder if they did that to give enough time between this movie and episode 9 so that people have a good enough rest. I wonder if they predicted the Star Wars fatigue that people keep talking about, and they wanted enough time in between Solo and episode 9 so that they could draw a real crowd and build the suspense and really draw people in for episode 9, the big finale of this Skywalker saga. But other than that, I don't know why people didn't see it. I think mainly it was probably, at least for me, it just wasn't marketed that well.
Yeah, I think when you talk about it, and I don't want to get too far because I want to let Ron talk too, but I do think, you know, they wanted to start moving back to that May time because, you know, episode 9 was supposed to be May of next year until all the behind-the-scenes stuff pushed it to December. You know, Star Wars has been a summer movie, and I think that's what they wanted to try to do, but I wonder if that was the right thing. Ron, have you got any theories?
Well, I kind of agree with Tina. I mean, I think that you had The Last Jedi release in December, and now we have, for the first time ever, right, guys? I mean, we've had another Star Wars movie, like, hit the theater screen within, like, what, 5 months?
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's necessarily overload. I'm looking at this going, they really should have moved this picture out until December. Now, maybe they didn't know that was an option, but I kind of feel like if this would have released in December, maybe the numbers are slightly better. I'm not saying they're exponentially better, but maybe slightly better. I don't know. I mean, I'm no expert on ticket numbers or, you know, I don't break this stuff down all the time, but I think when you come off the coattails of something like The Last Jedi, which really split the Star Wars fan base, and then you have a Star Wars story, one of these standalones that comes out like just months later. And I agree with, you know, the marketing really hit late. I mean, this wasn't like promoted like you would think a Star Wars movie would be. But let's go back a little bit farther, guys. I mean, you got to remember that there were two directors that were on this picture that were fired, and they were exited off this, and then Ron Howard took over. So there was a little bit of controversy that was taking place here too. And so I just think that you throw in elements like, hey, was anybody clamoring to see a Solo origin film? One, you shed the directors that you hired in. Two, this released like just months after a major Star Wars like saga film. I just think all the timing was just terrible. So you're looking at a picture that it's $350 million worldwide, which is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, but it's not to the Star Wars standard of tickets. I don't think they needed to release this in May. Now, I don't know if the new Star Wars standard is December now. I mean, maybe that's been established with the new franchise, but I think the timing hurt this one, and I think the circumstances behind the directors also hurt it, and I think in proximity to a major saga film hurt it as well.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. I think the 6 months we are having, I mean, you know, we grew up, all of us, I don't know about Brad, I don't know how old he is, and we've had some young guys on here, so I don't want to speak too much, but most of us old people, you know, grew up with 3 years between films, you know, and you just did, and then even with the prequels were, what, 2 or 3 years between films. Now we're hitting them every year, and then that's great, but it also doesn't give you the time to really sit down and process the film either. I mean, to sit down and really let it burn into you because you're always looking forward to the next one. And there is, I think that 6 month window was probably too short. And then, like I said, the marketing was iffy. I think that really hurt them that the first trailer they put out didn't show much of Alden Rock. I don't think he even spoke in it or something. It didn't do much. And so people are saying, oh, they're trying to hide him, that he's not going to be any good, and started getting some negative first impressions. But I think also, you know, look, this came out, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks after Infinity War, which was the culmination of 10 years of Marvel stuff. I mean, it was huge. It was still dominating the box office when Solo comes out. You've got Deadpool. You've got...
Yeah, Deadpool, too. I was going to say that, too. Right. I mean, don't discount that one. I mean...
No, and then you've got The Incredibles 2 weeks after. You've got Ant-Man and the Wasp coming up soon. I mean, it's sad, and you would like to think that no matter what kind of movies are out there, Star Wars would stand out. But there's a ton of blockbusters this summer, and a saga movie might have, but I think a saga movie might have even had trouble. But a standalone movie that, yeah, these Star Wars stories are never going to be as big as those other ones. I think all that kind of put together kind of had problems. And again, I will say that the blowback from The Last Jedi probably did affect you. You read people online saying, I hated The Last Jedi and I'm not going to see Solo until it comes out on streaming or whatever, which is really weird because you think those kind of people would really want to go see a legacy character, you know, one of these legendary ones, actually see them again and see if they were treated right. But, you know, fandom's not rational. If they don't have to do the reshoots, if they hired Ron Howard to start with, this movie probably makes money, even at $400 million domestic. You're right, it's not a huge hit, but it still probably makes money. I think with the reshoots right now, it's losing money. But
with its timing, Daniel, do you think it still makes the same? I mean, given the timing, even if Ron Howard was the guy from the beginning, do you think it would have still suffered being in such close proximity to when The Last Jedi?
Yeah, I do. I think it would. I think it would have. It might have done a little bit better if it didn't have the turmoil behind the scenes. But, you know, especially for casual fans, you know, a Star Wars movie might be a once a year appointment viewing. But I don't know that they're all that excited about seeing them all the time. Now, that being said, 10 years ago, we would have said the same thing about Marvel movies. And now, Marvel can throw out anything, and it's going to be, you know, a huge blockbuster. So, but they've built the groundwork, and Star Wars hasn't quite done that. They kind of started, you know, turning stuff out really quickly, and maybe if they'd taken a little bit more time, it would have helped. So, which gets us to transition to the last part of our show, as we're getting close to that hour mark that we want to hit to. But I do want to talk a little bit about the fact that there's stuff that came out this week that said, mainly because of how Solo was reached at the box office, that some of these Star Wars stories were going to be put on hold. And then that kind of, there's some other reports that came out and said no, that they're really not, that there was a Mos Eisley movie they were talking about, that one's kind of been shelved, but everything else is still going, and back and forth. Nobody's putting any names or sources or, you know, things of that nature, and Lucasfilm hasn't announced anything past Episode 9. Tina, what do you think? I mean, is this going to affect what they do going forward, or are they just going to kind of take this as a learning experience and kind of, you know, maybe take a little bit of a breather and see what the landscape looks like?
I think if anything, it may affect whether they actually did have plans to try to pursue some kind of sequel or continuation of the Solo story with the mall thing and all that. It may or may not affect whether they do any more of these one-shot origin stories like the, you know, the Obi-Wan movie that they had kicked around. And I feel like they brought up the possibility of a Boba Fett movie or something along those lines. So I think they may rethink whether they really want to continue to pour resources into those stories, considering what happened with this one. But it's hard to judge for me how much it might affect what they're doing, because there was so much the feeling that going into it that they were expecting it to be a flop. So knowing that they already had, they seemed to have low expectations for this movie, that they were still making plans for other movies, it seems like it wouldn't change their plans that much, because if they were, you know, planning on doing all this other stuff that they've talked about, even while they were anticipating that the solo movie was not going to do that well, then it seems like they would still continue on with those plans. So I think probably the one thing that I would wonder about is whether they might consider just scrapping whatever plans they had for these, you know, origin story type movies and just stick with some of the other trilogies that they have announced that are already in the works.
Ron, I mean, what do you think? I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's out there. Should they take a step back, or should they kind of, you know, think this is an aberration and kind of keep moving forward?
You know, it's really tough to tell. I mean, I come from a corporate world where you lay out a strategy and you do your best to follow it and you hit the beats. But I would have to say with this one, guys, I mean, with the way The Last Jedi went, I know we didn't want to get into that tonight, and I don't want to either. But I do think they need to hit the pause button just briefly and consider where they're taking this. Do they have the right leadership? Do they have the right direction? Is the creative where they think it's in a good place where they can move forward? I mean, this is, I don't know, guys. I mean, we're not in there. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. It's not an easy thing. I mean, we can sit here and judge on the sidelines all we want, and we're entitled to do it, but I don't envy the position that somebody like Kathleen Kennedy's in right now, because I think she, like Matheny, may be on the hot seat. Oh God, I brought a cardinal reference into this. I shouldn't have done that.
It's all right. It's okay.
All right, right. I'm just saying. I mean, I think this is a, you know, you look at the other movies and they've grossed a lot. Like The Force Awakens was like record breaking, right? Mm-hmm. But you look at it now, it's like this solo movie is such a failure. I mean, as far as what people were predicting financially would reap, that yeah, there'll be questions asked, and there'll be a cause for pause for decision makers. So we'll see how this works out. I mean, I'm not going to spew venom towards any of these people. I mean, this is a hard job for them. So.
Absolutely. Brad, where are you looking at the future of Star Wars? What do you want to see? What do you think you'll see?
Well, look, I'll never complain about more Star Wars in my life. But I'm kind of with Ron, where I think, I mean, you obviously continue with Episode 9, and money is going to be the biggest incentivizer one way or another for any business. Money is going to be what does it. So if the Episode 9 does incredibly well, like I think it will, I believe that they'll probably continue making movies. The day that Solo was released, they announced the Boba Fett movie. And I don't know, they didn't announce a day for it to come out or anything, but I think I think what you should do is, after Episode 9, take a break for a couple of years. What I would want, like I said, I would never complain about more Star Wars, but I think I would like the future of Star Wars I would like there to be a future for Star Wars. And I think for that to happen, they need to be profitable, and obviously. And I think the best way to do that would to give everybody a break mentally, especially after such a huge culmination. I mean, you talk about the Marvel, which just finished a 10-year waiting period for Infinity War, but the Skywalker saga has been going on since the late 70s, and it's about to end. And that's huge for a lot of people. So I think after that, you let everybody kind of take a reset for a few years.
Steven, is that what you think is going to work for this franchise as well?
You know, as much as I don't want it to, I think that's going to have to be the direction they go in the cinematic aspect, because there is so much coming out on TV. You've got the animated series, you've got the streaming series, you've got all this other stuff that they plan on doing, and I believe there's more than one live action series that they're planning on. So I think that might be best for things, and honestly I think that is what's going to happen, because I think they're going to have, I don't know if they're what they're started yet on Rian Johnson's trilogy, but I think there's a lot of development that needs to happen before we're close to any kind of reveal on that. I know we're still about a year away from, a little less than a year away from episode 9. And so he's got kind of a year to get things going. But I still think they're going to be, at least after episode 9, I would assume at least 2 years away from the next cinematic experience in terms of a saga. And it might be best to kind of let things kick off after a couple of years at that point, to kind of let the things calm down and cool down a little bit, and to let the animated series and the live action series just kind of have room to take off in a way.
Yeah, I mean, the Boba Fett movie is rumored, but there's nothing, you know, Lucasfilm hasn't announced anything, which they weren't going to do with Solo, and you know, maybe this summer, although I've heard they're not going to be at Comic-Con, at least as a panel, you know, maybe some stuff will come out then, although it's probably more likely to be related to Star Wars Resistance and maybe the live-action one. But yeah, we're getting to that point where you would think they'd almost have to announce something, because, you know, they've done the filming, I believe, for episode 9 this year. You know, they've got to do the post-production. So if you're looking at a December 2020, you're looking at filming at the beginning of 19, which means that you're basically 6 months away right now, and you're 6 months away from that time period with no movie announced, no cast announced, no anything. You know, maybe they're working behind the scenes, but it does feel like there's going to be some sort of a gap. I think the Rian Johnson trilogy, you know, he was talking about 2 or 3 years, maybe before we even heard much about it. You've got the D.B. Weiss and whatever the other guy's name is, series of films, whether it's a trilogy or not, we don't know. But that's not going to start until after they get done with Game of Thrones, which is another couple of years. I think they're going to wind up, as everybody's kind of talking about it, looks like they're going to wind up with a natural break after 9. Which I have a feeling 9's not going to do very well. I mean, it's going to do better than this, but compared to 7 and 8, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that do have no urge to go back after Last Jedi, and that's fine. That just gives me more room at the theater. But I think that after 9, then yeah, they'll take that break and see what's best. And I don't know if they'll ever do what Marvel does and announce movies, you know, 7-8 years in advance or whatever they do. They may be more, you know, announce one or two, you know, one that's in process and one that's about to come out. But it's going to be interesting to see how this stuff picks up and what lessons they take out of Solo, and we'll just have to go from there. Everyone, I appreciate you joining me tonight. It's been fun. Look forward to it. We'll get together again a month or two from now, maybe, if we start hearing some stuff about Resistance or about the new live action show, we'll get together and we'll talk about that. But until then, just for everybody that's with us tonight, good night.